Greetings, friends, and a warm welcome to you on this fine day. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to join me once again as we spend some more time around the old parlor radio. Today I'm going to feature two programs that couldn't be more different from each other. An early version of a long-running comedy series, followed by a crime show known for its grit and realism. First, the comedy show. The Jack Benny program had a long broadcast run, airing on radio from May 2, 1932 until May 22, 1955, and airing on television from 1950 to 1965. The program takes its name from its star, Jack Benny, who over time developed his famous character, a lovable miser and skinflint whose age was 39 regardless of Benny's real age. Today I'm going to play the first episode of the Jack Benny program, which debuted the evening of Monday, May 2, 1932 on the NBC Blue Network. The format of this show differs some from his later more famous shows, with a heavier focus on musical acts than comedy. I hope you enjoy it.
Ginger Ales presents a series of programs to advertise the new made-to-order Canada Dry, which you can now buy by the glass at drugstores and soda fountains. This series will feature George Olson and his music, Miss Ethel Chute, the star of many Broadway successes, and that suave comedian, dry humorist, and famous master of ceremonies, Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Thorgerson. That's pretty good from a man who doesn't even know me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking and making my first appearance on the air professionally. By that I mean I'm finally getting paid, which, of course, will be a great relief to my creditors. I really don't know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be a sort of a master of ceremonies and tell you all the things that will happen, which would happen anyway. I must introduce the different artists who could easily introduce themselves and also talk about the Canada Dry made-to-order by the glass, which is a waste of time, as you know all about it. You drink it, like it, and don't want to hear about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, a master of ceremonies is really a fellow who is unemployed and gets paid for it. I think you will like the entertainment arranged for tonight, I hope. Of course, I haven't seen any of the program myself, but I've spoken to the artists individually. They seem to think it's awfully good. The first number will be a selection by George Olson and his orchestra. I think this, being our first program together, it is no more than fair that I have you meet Mr. Olson personally. He's really a very charming fellow and one of the few directors who comes to and from his work on roller skates. That's perhaps the silliest thing that I'll say all night, I think. I might add that Mr. Olson is very, very handsome. I told you, George, I'd get that in. But as long as we are both on the air, of course, I won't have to worry about that. Oh, George, come here. I want you to say hello to the folks.
Hello, everybody.
That was George Olson, ladies and gentlemen. He rehearsed that speech all week. You know, this is really all play with George. He doesn't have to work at all. I might say that Mr. Olson is one of the wealthiest conductors in America. You know what I mean. He owns his own car. Of course, the other boys are in debt, too. George, what kind of a car have you?
A Saxon.
A what?
A Saxon.
A Saxon, huh? Well, it was my fault for bringing it up at all. Is it a new one?
Oh, yes, a very late model.
I see. Well, you must have been in this country a long time now, haven't you, Georgia?
Yes. Say, by the way, Jack, what kind of a car have you?
Me? I have a bicycle built for two. I mean, now, you can't go back any further than that, I think. Well, George, I think we ought to get started. What's the first number?
I beg your pardon, mademoiselle. It's a French number, Jack. Do you like French numbers?
Do I? Mon duck, mon duck.
Thank you. like to tell you, Mademoiselle, you're wonderful, you're marvelous, and all the words you quote, lovely weather, Mademoiselle, let's get together, Mademoiselle, you know I love you, but if you don't parley through, I beg your pardon, Mademoiselle.
That orchestra, you know, with the baton in your hand. I don't know, there's something about all you fellas when you stand there waving that stick in the air. It's thrilling, you know. One thing I'd like to know, George, if the band didn't show up, what would you do with that stick?
Why, I'd throw it away and do what you're doing.
Always kidding. And now, ladies and gentlemen, may I present a young lady who is a star of many New York productions, Miss Ethel Chatté. You will remember Miss Chatté best in Whoopi playing opposite Eddie Cantor. Is it all right for me to mention Cantor's name here? Everybody else does. Ethel, come over and say hello.
Oh, hello.
Wasn't that clever? Oh, she does a lot of things like that. You'd be surprised. And Miss Chatté is going to sing for us. She has a beautiful voice, too. She has a sort of a nervous soprano. You know what I mean? In fact, last week she had her nose lifted so she could be heard in Philadelphia. And, oh, by the way, here's a little news for you might interest you. Miss Chatté is really Mrs. George Olson. Although I wouldn't go as far as to say that that's the reason she happens to be on this program. Nevertheless, she's Mrs. George Olson. Such a nice girl, too. I'm surprised that she's married to Olson. And now, Miss Chatté will sing, I Found a $1 Million Baby. I still feel a little Frenchy tonight, Ethel, so it's mon duck to you, too.
$1 million baby from the fire of the dance floor. delicacies from the five and ten cent store.
She was selling China.
I kept thinking of my girl. You know, I get so sentimental. I really have a girl. She lives in Newark, New Jersey. You know, the girl I go with when I'm in Newark? She's not what you call good-looking, exactly. In fact, she's quite homely, but then she can't stay in the house all the time. I imagine you folks have seen her pictures in different magazines. You know, she poses for the beauty ad entitled Before Taking. And she comes from a very fine family, although her father very often partakes of the forbidden beverage. It's all right for me to mention that, as they have no radio. In fact, her father drank everything in the United States and then went up north to drink Canada Dry. Boy, I'm glad I thought of that, Joe. You know, the one about Canada Dry? I'm really supposed to mention it occasionally. After all, I owe it to my sponsors, and they might be listening in. Seriously, though, do you realize, folks, that if you want to drink Canada Dry, well, say just a glass. You don't have to buy it in the bottle. You can walk into any drugstore or soda fountain that has that big sign, Canada Dry, made to order, ask for a glass and get it. I know you always have it in your home in bottles, but isn't it nice to know that you don't have to wait until you get home to drink it? Gee, I thought I did that pretty well for a new salesman, eh? I suppose nobody will drink it now. And now, folks, a very stirring number called I Love a Parade with a vocal refrain by the Messrs. Fran Fry, Bobby Borger, and Bob Wright. That was I Love a Parade, ladies and gentlemen. A kind of a number that grips and thrills you, gives you that great feeling of patriotism, and makes you glad that you're an American. Personally, it didn't bother me very much because I took a nap while the boys were playing it. Now, folks, in case you've forgotten, this is Jack Benny again. You know, the Canada dry humorist. Say, I thought that was good. The Canada dry humorist. I made that up myself, huh?
It sounds like it.
That witty retort was by George Olson, ladies and gentlemen, proving again that he is still an orchestra leader. At that, George has a great sense of humor. Say, he told me a story the other day. Do you mind if I tell it, George? I'll give you credit for it, you know. It's really supposed to be true, too. It's about George's uncle, who had been ill for a long time. He had what you call labor poisoning. You know what I mean? He just couldn't stand working. So his doctor finally told him that he would have to get a lot of fresh air, do outside work, but not lift anything heavy. He told him that at no time was he to lift anything heavy. So his uncle got a job as a garbage man in Scotland. Funny, I never heard that one before, but the thing that kills me is Olsen telling a Scotch story. I mean, because George, you know, is no centrist himself. In fact, he invited me to dinner the other night, much to his own surprise, and he paid the check with a $5 bill that was in his pocket so long that Lincoln's eyes were bloodshot. That's a fact. However, he will now favor us with that very popular song hit called Paradise. After all, why should his orchestra be an exception?
By this time, I know you're thoroughly bored listening to Jack our master of ceremonies and his alleged Canada dry humor and telling you all about made to order Canada dry. We also have a product to sell. It's music. And may we show you now just how we make music. He sure plays some with two little 60 beats on his drum. And that's how we make music. Now we have the boys with their violin. Their bows go back and forth when they begin. And the drums. Now the trumpets play loud and shrill, but when they get going, they'll give you a thrill. And the violin and the drums. The old trombone flies up and down. When he gets hot, he goes to town. And the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. When you want a shiver, a quiver, or a groan, we call upon the boys with the saxophone. And the trombone, and the trumpet, and the violin, and the drum. Please, please, now, when we want some rhythm, where do we go? Why, it's old Bob Rice and his old banjo. And the saxophone, and the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Oh, the cow is now a little birdie. All right. Now, the next old fella can't be beat. You know him well. It's Piccolo Pete. And the banjo, and the saxophone, the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Okay, Ben Burney, if you like it. That's it. Now, we have the piano for cadences and such. All he needs is a very light touch. And the piccolo, and the banjo, and the saxophone, and the trombone, and the trumpet, and the violin, and the drum. So are you, so are you. Now, the old bass fiddle plays way down low. He has to get a Derrick to move his bow. And the piano, and the piccolo, and the banjo, and the saxophone, and the trombone, the trumpet, the violin, and the drum. Hey, please. Bass, piano, piccolo, banjo, saxophone, trombone, trumpet, violin. Now that's how we make you.
That was cute, George. I mean, babies will like it anyway. I think. And, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the way these boys make music. Now, if they could only play it. Mr. Olson will now play Come West, Little Girl, Come West. And I'm supposed to sing a chorus of this number. And do you know, folks, that 6 months ago, I couldn't sing a note. Really, I could not sing a note. But after taking 3 glasses every day of Canada Dry made-to-order ginger ale, I still am unable to sing and can't even sign a note. So the moral of this is drink that champagne of ginger ale, Canada Dry, and don't worry about signing notes. So for want of a better soloist, Miss Chute will sing, Come West, Little Girl, Come West. I'm going east.
I love to hear a cowboy sing like a cowboy sings when he's blue. Round the campfire on the range when his daily work is through. If I could hear a certain love song, what memories it would bring. I can't forget that love song the cowboys used to sing. The sun will set, the moon will rise, but I want to look in my baby's eyes. Come west, little girl, come west. The breeze will blow, the stars will be, but I'm too lonesome to go to sleep. Come west, little girl, come west. Oh, don't be pining away, way down east. You know my love here for you will increase. I love the west, it's full of charm, but I rest best in my baby's arms. Come west, little girl, come west. The sun will set, the moon will rise, but I'm gonna look in my baby's eyes. Come west, little girl, come west. The breeze will blow, the stars will be, but I'm too lonesome to go to sleep. Come west, little girl, come west. So don't be pining away, way down east. Know my love here for you will increase. Love the west, it's full of charm, but I look best in my baby's arms. Come west, river girl.
Oh,
everybody. This is Kate Smith, or Jack Benny talking. You see how nervous I am? I mean, not so much because I'm broadcasting, but I think all my relatives are listening in, and I don't want them to know that I'm working. Although I have an older brother that I'm quite fond of. I mean, we get along great. We sort of share everything together. I mean, what's mine is his, and what's his is his, you know. This has absolutely nothing to do with Canada Dry made order. I keep getting entirely off the subject. But don't forget, folks, that you can walk into your neighborhood drugstore, or any drugstore. I mean, after all, I don't care what drugstore you walk into. I'm just the master of ceremonies here, that's all. I mean, if I'm going to have to worry about things like that, you know, I'll have my hands full. But go into any drugstore and order a glass, mind you. Not a bottle, but a glass of made-to-order Canada Dry ginger ale and stagger out. Isn't it funny, the things you can buy today in a drugstore? I went in for an aspirin the other day and came out with a new hat. I imagine the next number will be by George Olson. He's about to make his first appearance on this program. In fact, I'm lucky to be getting here at all. This is called Drums in My Heart. And boys, try and finish this all together if you can. We'll see. Are you sleeping? I hope you'll be with us again Wednesday. In fact, I hope I'll be here Wednesday. George, so we all hope that we'll be here Wednesday. Well, good night then.
All aboard, away we go. Get that little lady on the train, boy. All aboard.
Canada Dry. The ginger ale now available made to order at drug stores and soda fountains, as well as in bottles. Canada Dry has presented Jack Benny, Ethel Chute, and George Olson and his music. The same group of artists will be with you at this time Wednesday evening. Drums in My Heart, from Through the Years, was played tonight with the special permission of the copyright owner. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
WJZ, New York.
Well, I truly hope you're entertained by our first program today. You just heard the debut program, the Jack Benny program, which is simply titled First Show. I realize I forgot to clarify that earlier. The show was first heard on May 2nd, 1932 on the NBC Blue Network. Next, a show that one could perhaps argue is almost a polar opposite to Jack Benny. The series I speak of is Dragnet, the crime series based on real cases from the Los Angeles Police Department. Dragnet ran radio from June 3, 1949 until February 26, 1957, all on NBC. Jack Webb was the show's creator and director and starred as Sergeant Joe Fry. The series quickly earned a reputation for its gritty realism. Today's episode, titled The Big Lover, also starred Ben Alexander as Frank Smith, Sergeant Fry's partner, and was first heard on Thursday, March 29, 1951. Enjoy.
Dragnet. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a bunco detail. For the past year, a confidence man has been cheating women in your city. You finally get a lead on him. Your job? Get him.
It was Wednesday, February 12th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of bunco detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Steed. My name's Friday. We were at the Armstrong Thomas Department Store cafeteria, and it was 3:14 p.m. when I got back to the table.
Here, Joe. Let me give you a hand.
Oh, thanks.
Here you are, Miss Turner.
Thank you.
I wonder if you'd tell us what this is all about now, ma'am.
Surely. Sorry you had to wait, but I thought it might be better if we talked up here.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you pass the sugar, please?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Here you are.
Well, it's not a pretty thing. I don't know how I could have been so foolish. But I guess when you get to be my age and you haven't got anything on, any attention makes you forget.
Yes, ma'am. How'd you first meet this man, Ben?
I saw him first at a musicale. I met him very briefly that night. He called me the next day. Said that he wanted to see me again. Well, I told him that I didn't think it'd be proper, but he insisted, so that night we had dinner together. He seemed so nice, I still can't believe it.
Yes, ma'am.
Such a wonderful time. I didn't think anybody could be so happy. We ate at a wonderful little place down at the beach. Then we went for a long drive and listened to the music on the radio. Just beautiful. The way the ocean looked, all moonlight and all.
Mm-hmm. When'd you see him again, ma'am?
Not until he left. He'd call a couple of times a day. It got a little embarrassing. The girls at the store here got to kidding me about it, but I didn't care. Then, he told me he wanted to marry me. I couldn't believe it. So wonderful.
Yes, ma'am.
Then one day, he told me that he was going to have to take a business trip up north.
When was that, do you remember, ma'am?
I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
Well, he left. I went down to the station and saw him off. He kissed me and said that when he got back, we'd be married. We were going over to Las Vegas on our honeymoon. Wonderful plan. Wonderful. Then I heard from him. He got to San Francisco. He called me from the hotel and said that he'd lost his wallet on the train. He told me he'd lost everything. All his money, identification, everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he asked me for the $100. I didn't think that anything was wrong, so I sent it to him.
Where'd you send it, ma'am?
To his hotel.
Did you hear from him at all after that, ma'am?
Not a word. At first, I thought that maybe he was just... It was kind of funny that he wouldn't say something about getting the money I sent, but not a word. Then I got worried.
Yes, ma'am, I understand.
Finally, I called the hotel, and they told me that he'd checked out. I figured that maybe he was back in town and wanted to surprise me. So I called his apartment. The landlady told me that he had left a couple of weeks before, that he didn't leave any forwarding address.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't know what to think. I didn't want to believe that he'd just used me, but there didn't seem to be anything else to think.
Yes, ma'am.
Then, of course, it was only $100. Seems that if he'd wanted to rob me, he could have asked for more. I still don't believe it, even when I know it's true.
Yes, ma'am. Now, I wonder if you could give us a description of the man.
Yes, I can do that. Let's see. He was tall.
About how tall, ma'am?
Over 6 feet. Maybe 6 feet two. He had blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wavy.
About how much would you say he weighed, Miss Harris?
I'd just be guessing, but I'd say about 190 or so.
I see. I wonder if you'd be kind enough to come down to the City Hall and look at some pictures for us.
You think you might have one of them?
Possible, ma'am. Maybe it'd make you feel a little better to know that you're not the only woman that this Benton has taken. There have been quite a few.
I guess I knew that. Even if I didn't want to believe it, I guess I knew it was just a confidence game. Such a cruel thing, though, to use a person's loneliness to rob them.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
When you get along in years and you haven't got anything to hold on to, little attention and affection makes you forget everything else. Nothing else seems to matter.
Yes, ma'am. I guess that's the way they figure it. Frank and I had been looking for Jonathan Benton for the past year. During that time, he'd taken approximately $37,000 from women in the Los Angeles area. His method of operation was to answer the ads in the personal columns of the daily papers. He'd give the woman a whirlwind courtship, then under the pretext of having to clean up some business before marriage, he'd leave town. He'd call the next day and give them the story about losing his wallet and identification. He'd ask them for $100. This in itself was to throw off the suspicions of the victim. In the event that they suspected that they were being taken in a racket, $100 was small enough so that their fears were quieted. Benton would answer about 20 to 30 of these ads at a time, and the request for money would hit all of the suspects at once. We'd had several complaints lately, and there was no way of knowing how many women were being taken and were too embarrassed to report it to the authorities. 4:30 p.m. We drove Miss Terrence back to the City Hall and had her check the mug books. She was unable to give us an identification, however. Another month passed. During that time, we received 14 more complaints. In all instances, the description of the suspect matched that of Jonathan Benton. All available sources of information were checked. Bulletins had been gotten out carrying his description and the name he used. No result. On Wednesday, March 25th, we got a call that a man answering Benton's description had placed an ad in the personal columns of one of the daily papers. He'd used the name of Thomas Conan. The clerk at the ad counter gave us his address, and at 5:32 p.m., Frank and I went out to talk to him.
Yeah?
You Thomas Conan?
Yeah, that's right. What can I do for you?
Police officers would like to talk to you.
Sure, come on in. Always glad to talk to the law.
This is my partner, Frank Smith.
How do you do, Mr. Smith?
How do you do, sir?
If you boys will come on in, I'll shut the door.
Thank you.
Now, what's this all about?
Well, sir, did you put this ad in the paper?
Now, let me see. Texas cowman desires to meet petite young lady, object companionship. Spelled everything right, did. Yes, sir, that's mine. I wrote it all myself.
How long have you been in Los Angeles?
Well, now, let's see. Got in on the bus last Tuesday. That'd make a week and a day.
Uh-huh. What brings you out here?
Well, I guess you could say it's kind of a business trip. Got a little tired of the same faces back home, so I thought I'd just see what the rest of the country looked like. What little A's of it. I'm from Texas, you know. Amarillo. Yeah. What's all this about, anyway? Some law I broke?
No, it's about that ad.
Oh, you found out, huh?
Beg pardon?
Oh, you found out about me saying I was a cattleman. That's it, ain't it?
What do you mean?
Well, now, I didn't mean the harm. I do have a couple milk cows on the place. A Holstein and a Guernsey. They're real nice, too. It's just that I was so darn lonesome, I kind of thought this might be a way to meet some nice gal. I didn't mean the harm. You can see that, can't you?
Yes, sir, I guess so. Wonder if you'd mind taking a ride with us, sir?
Well, I should say not. Always happy to go along with the law. Where do you figure to go to?
We'd like you to meet somebody.
Well, now that's right nice of you. Got some gal you'd like me to meet, huh?
Well, it's not exactly that, sir.
Well, it don't matter none. I got nothing to do anyhow. Just sitting here wondering if I'd get any replies for the ad.
All right, sir. If you wouldn't mind, let's go.
Not at all. I'll get my hat.
5:40 p.m. We drove Thomas Conant downtown and had a car go out and pick up Miss Terrence. While we talked to Conant in the interrogation room, she walked by the open door and looked in at the suspect. She told us that he was not the man who'd victimized her. She was returned to her home, and after Conant had been checked through R&I, he was released. The next morning, Frank and I ran down a tip from an informant, but it led us nowhere. 10:18 a.m., we checked back into the office.
You get the latest bulletin from San Francisco, Joe?
Yeah, I looked it over this morning. They checked out the hotel Benton was staying at. He checked out of there. They haven't seen him since.
Well, that means he's probably back here in town, huh?
Well, if he is, we should start hearing about him again pretty soon. I'll get it. Bunko, Friday. Who? Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, Mr. Terrence, I remember. Yes, ma'am. Where was that? Would you give me that again? Yes, ma'am. 48 Vine. Uh-huh. Yes, that's right, ma'am. We'll get in touch with you. Right. Thank you very much. Bye.
Grace Terrence?
Yeah, she just saw Benton.
Where?
Went into an apartment out on Vine Street. A.M. Frank and I got to the apartment house on Vine Street. We talked to the landlord, and he told us that a man answering the suspect's description was registered in apartment 4B. He was registered under the name Jonathan Benson. He told us that this Benson had just moved in and paid his first month's rent in advance. He'd said that he was just going to be in town for a short time, and that in the event that he moved out before his month was up, he expected no refund. Frank and I went up to the fourth floor and knocked on the door.
Yeah?
You Jonathan Benson?
Who are you?
Police officers want to talk to you.
What about?
Might be better if we talked inside.
Maybe I don't want you in my
All right, place. Now, mister, you get your hat. We want to talk to you downtown.
What for?
Come on, get your hat.
Just a minute. I think maybe there's been some kind of mistake here. Just tell me exactly what it is you're looking for. I'm sure we can work
Come
it
on,
out.
Come on, mister. Quit stalling. Get your hat, will you?
Come on in. I'll get my hat.
I'll get it for you. In this closet?
Yeah, the gray one. You sure you got the right man?
Looks that way.
Mm-hmm. No way to work this out.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't even know why you want me to go with you. Seems you could fill me in on that.
Got some people we'd like to have you meet.
Who?
You'll see when we get there.
Here's your hat. Come on, let's go.
You guys sure think you're the Gestapo, coming in here dragging a private citizen out of his house.
If you haven't done anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about then, have you?
That's not the point. I don't like it. Coming in here and taking me downtown so a lot of stupid old broads can look at me.
Who said we wanted women to look at you?
You did.
No, we said we wanted you to meet some people.
Must have misunderstood, huh?
Yeah, I guess you did.
No way we can work this out, huh?
There's no way. Now, come on.
Oh, just a minute. I want to be sure I got my key. I don't want to be locked out.
Don't worry about it.
What do you mean?
You might not be coming back. Frank and I took Jonathan Benson downtown. We ran him through R&I, but we got no identification. His fingerprints were rolled and checked, but they didn't make him. Miss Terrence was called and asked to come down to the city hall to try to identify the suspect. 2:30 p.m., we took him to the interrogation room.
You ever use the name Benton?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
You ever use any other alias?
Why should I?
You tell us.
Now, look, why don't you come off it? Tell me what this is all about.
You told us you just got into town, is that right?
Yeah, I've been here about a week.
Where'd you come from?
Up north.
Where up north?
San Francisco.
You live up there, do you?
Most of the time, yeah.
Most of the time? What's that mean?
Just that. Most of the time I live in San Francisco. That hard for you guys to understand?
What line of work are you in?
I'm a salesman.
Yeah, what do you sell?
Whatever people want to buy.
What are you selling now?
Nothing right now. That's why I'm here. I'm looking for a deal.
You know a woman named Terrence, Grace Terrence?
I don't think so. Might. Why?
We'd like to know.
Hey, maybe I'm wrong about all of this, but it seems to me that when they taught me civics in school, they said that I had to be booked, that you had to let me go. They changed that law?
No, that law's still good.
Then let's stop horsing around. I got a lot of things I want to do. Fill me in on this and then let me out of here.
All right. There's been a confidence man working in the L.A. area, been taking money from women. Gives them a big pitch about wanting to marry him, and then he hits them up for $100 and leaves them.
Sounds like a good racket.
He's taking a lot of money from people who haven't got it to spare.
Offhand, I'd say that's their tough luck.
Offhand, we'd say you're wrong.
Where you look at it. Where do I fit into this little fantasy?
You look good for the guy who's been pulling the deal.
You're flipping.
Description matches.
So I look like another guy.
Everything else about you checks out.
So you figure you've made me for the jobs, huh?
That's what we figure.
Which way's the gas chamber? Oh, come off it, fellas. You guys know you're trying to hang a bad rap on me. You know it, and so do I. Now let's call the whole thing off. I can get out of here, and you can get to the pinochle.
I'll get it.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
Miss
Rachel,
you're here.
Oh,
yes,
Miss
Terrence.
Would you
come in,
please? Hello, Jonathan.
What?
Why'd you do it, Jonathan? Why? If you wanted the money, you could have asked for it. I'd have given it to you. You didn't have to lie about what you felt.
Place is full of Amalonis.
Is this the man, Miss Terrence?
Yes, Sergeant, that's him.
All right, how about it, Benson?
I don't know what she's talking about. What's this bit with that's him? Looney's jumping with
him. All right, now, Benson, I've had enough of that. Now, come off it. You've just been identified. We got a lot more of them that we can have here. I think they'll identify you, too.
Why, John? Why?
Oh, get her out of here. One thing I can't stand is a woman bawling. Something comes along, you can't figure out right away they got a ball. Anything comes along, they got to cry. I'm sick of it.
All right, ma'am. Maybe it'd be better if you waited in our office.
Yes, Sergeant. Still don't know why he did it. Why he took this way to get the money.
I took this way because it was the easy way. You broads are all alike. Every last one of you. Let me get a few things straight first. You say I took $100 from you. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. I want you to think about this and think real careful. Didn't I say that I wanted to borrow the money? Isn't that what I said, borrow?
Yes, that's what you said.
Did I say that I'd pay the money back in any certain time?
I don't know.
Well, you think real good. You'll remember that I didn't. I just said that I'd pay you back. That's all. I didn't say when.
I guess I don't care.
There you are. Is it any crime to borrow money from a friend? I borrowed the money from her. I'll pay it back.
You said you wanted to marry me. You said you loved me.
Oh, come off it, Sarah. You got no beat. You got the soft light and the romantic music. You got it all. Look at you. Take a good look. Who'd want to marry you? Here, just a minute. Here. Here's $100 I borrowed. I want to pay you back. I got $100 worth of laughs from you. That much easy. Here's your dough. Now go home and have a good cry. I wouldn't marry you if you were the last woman on earth.
That's enough of that, Benson.
You're not just kidding. This old harpy with romantic ideas. What a laugh. She thinks anybody want to marry her, and she's a loony, too.
I didn't think anybody could be this mean. I didn't think anyone could be this cruel. I don't believe.
You got no choice. You know it all along. Thanks for the laughs.
Come on, Miss Terrence.
Imagine that old bag really thinking I'd marry her.
Yeah.
Real laugh. Well, anyway, she got her dough back. I said I'd pay her back. I did. You check with the rest of them. I'll tell you the same thing. I borrowed the money, that's all. I can't help it if they thought something else. I can't help it, Callan. Come on, let's get this over with. I want to get out of here.
Yeah.
You look upset, Cut. Don't be. It won't prove anything. That's the way
it
is.
I got something for you, Benson.
Is that right?
Yeah. Someplace, sometime, you're going to make a mistake.
Is that right?
Yeah, and when you do, we're going to lean on you, and we're going to lean hard. We had 12 of the victims of the confidence man look at Benson. All of them gave a positive identification, but verified his story that he'd borrowed the money from them. 4:25 p.m., Frank and I got in touch with the district attorney's office and talked with them. What Benson had said was true. In borrowing the money, or in saying he was borrowing it, he'd committed no violation of the law. We had to release him from custody. A month passed. During that time, we'd heard nothing more from the suspect. He'd stopped working the Dodge in the Los Angeles area. We contacted the San Francisco authorities and informed them of what had happened. They said that they'd be on the lookout for Benson. During the next 2 weeks, Frank and I worked on a ring of bunco artists that were working the obituary columns. On June 16th, we got a call from Burglary Division that they'd gotten a report of a theft. And talking to the victim, they'd gotten the name Jack Bentley. They checked the files on him and found that it could be Jonathan Benson. The victim, a Miss Betty Lindsay, came to our office to talk to us.
I don't know why they thought that I should see you. It's just a plain theft.
The officers in burglary said that they thought we might be interested in the thief, Miss Lindsay. I wonder if you'd tell us about him.
Lousy crumb. This guy's a real schnook. Schnook of the first water.
Yes, ma'am. What's his name, please?
He called himself Bentley, Jack Bentley. What a bum.
What'd he look like, Miss Lindsay?
Tall and blonde. Kind of nice looking guy if you went for the type. No good bum.
I wonder if you'd take a look at some of the pictures we've got here and see if he's in need.
Sure. I'd like to see you get him. Where are the pictures?
Frank, would you get him, please?
Yeah.
Where'd you meet this Bentley, do you remember?
Well, I'm sort of the hostess at a place downtown over on Fifth. Anyway, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, this schnook comes in, orders a couple of drinks, and leaves. Next night, he's back again. Ooh, he was a cagey one. Didn't work too fast. Took about a week to make the pitch, then he asked me out to dinner. Well, he always seemed kind of nice, so I told him I'd go.
Mm-hmm. Here are the pictures, ma'am.
If you just take a look through them and see if there's one of Bentley in there.
Sure. Let's see. No. No. Hey, this one's kind of cute. What's he wanted for?
Oh, he works the casualty racket.
What's that?
Gets the names of people that have died, tells their families that they ordered some stuff.
What kind of stuff?
Oh, pen and pencil sets, watches, cheap things. Charges a lot of money for them. Most of the people figure that it's one of the last things their loved ones wanted, so they pay the prices. The stuff's worthless.
Lousy racket. But a nice looking guy, too. So honest.
Well, that's why it works.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, let me see. No, it's not him. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's him. Ooh, what a nudnik.
Ma'am?
A nudnik, a real bum. But that's him, I'm sure of it.
Benson.
Yeah.
You mean you know this guy?
Yes, ma'am. What if you tell us exactly what happened?
Sure, like I was telling you, this guy... Benson?
Yes, ma'am, that's right. Jonathan Benson.
Yeah, well, anyway, he asked me out to dinner. I told him I'd go. He looked like he was pretty well fixed. I figured it wouldn't do no harm. Well, see, I don't get out till 12:30, and there ain't many places, nice places, open after that. But I said, yeah, so he told me he'd pick me up. He got to the club about 10 o'clock. Said that he'd gotten through with whatever it was he was doing, that he came by to see if he could use my apartment to freshen up a bit. Freshen up a bit. Boy, what a way to heist the place. Oh, what a bum.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Well, I gave him the key of the place. He said that he'd stop at a drugstore and pick up a razor, shave and wash his face, and he'd be back to pick me up. The last I ever saw of him.
Mm-hmm.
Walked off with a fur coat I had. Saved for 3 years for that coat. Cost me $900. And he took a ring worth about 150. Diamonds. Belonged to my mother. Sure hope you get him. Nail him good.
Yes, ma'am.
Ooh, what a nudnik.
We continued to question Betty Lindsay. She gave us the name of one of Benson's friends. We checked on him, and he gave us the name of a girl who knew the suspect. We talked to her, and she was able to give us Benson's address. It was a rooming house on Franklin Avenue in the Hollywood area. 6:47 p.m. Frank and I went up to his room.
Yeah, come on in. Should have kept my mouth shut. What do you guys want?
We want to talk you downtown, Benson.
We aren't going to get on that merry-go-round again, are we? I'm getting tired of this whole deal. What are you guys trying to tire me this time?
We didn't have to do it, Benson. You took care of that yourself.
That right?
Yep, you made a mistake.
What is it this time? You figure I took some candy away from a blind man?
All right, come on, Benson. Let's go.
You're going to arrest me this time, or am I going as a favor?
This time it's on us.
You mean we're playing for keeps now?
Yeah.
What's the charge?
Grand theft.
You're kidding.
Nope.
I really believe you're serious.
That's right. You called it.
This is going to be interesting. If you can't prove this, I'm going to own City Hall, and the first thing I'm going to do is fire you two. You know that, don't you?
Well, we'll take that chance.
All right, but don't say I didn't warn you. You know, someday I'm going to write a book. Call it Some of My Best Friends Are Cops.
Yeah, you do that.
I will.
You'll have the time. We took the suspect downtown. We talked to him for over an hour, but he'd admit nothing. Without being able to produce the stolen articles, the case would be difficult to prosecute. We had Benson take everything out of his pockets. Among his personal effects, we found a key to a locker in the subway terminal. Two men from Bunko Division took the key and went down to the terminal. They recovered a locked suitcase and brought it back to the squad room where we were questioning Benson.
How about it, Benson? This yours?
Never saw it before in my life.
It's locked. You got a key to this, Benson?
I told you it wasn't mine. What more can I say?
See those keys there, huh, Frank?
Yeah. Here. All
right.
I don't know what this is all going to prove. I told you the suitcase isn't mine.
Yeah, that figures. That's how come the keys fit, huh?
Cheap suitcase. A lot of the keys double.
Is that right?
Sure, lots of times I lost the key for one suitcase, used the key from another one to open.
You ever find one of these in the case?
I never saw that fur coat in my life. Haven't got the slightest idea how it got there. I want to talk to a lawyer.
You're getting kind of jumpy, aren't you, Benson?
Sure, I don't mind admitting it. I told you I got no idea where that coat came from, but I know you guys aren't going to believe it. You're out to get me. You said so. You're going to try everything you can do with it.
You want to tell us about it now?
There ain't nothing to tell. I don't know nothing about it.
You don't ever give up, do you?
I don't know what you're talking about. I want to see a lawyer.
All right, we'll fix it so you can put that call in. We got the owner of this coat on the way down here. She's going to identify him, and that's all we need. Now, you just sit there and keep your mouth shut, will you?
I'll get it. Bunko, Smith. What's that? Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, I remember. What? You did, huh? Well, that's swell. Glad to hear it. Well, I wouldn't know. I'm not much of an authority, I guess. Her name's what? Yeah. It's a nice name. Well, I'll be glad to tell him. I'm sure he'll be pleased. Thanks very much for calling. When are you leaving? I see. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Anything?
Yeah, it's that kid from Texas, you know, that Thomas Conant.
Oh, yeah. You mean the cattleman?
Yeah. Got an answer to his ad.
Is that right?
Yeah. Somebody called him up and said that he made a real good deal for himself, and he's shipping her back to Texas.
Well, you mean he found a girl?
No. Bought himself another Holstein.
The story you've just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On October 17th, trial was held in Department 87, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Jonathan Arthur Benson, alias Jack Bentley, was tried and convicted of grand theft. He received sentence as prescribed by law. Grand theft is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for not less than 1 nor more than 10 years.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb, a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Listening to that program, one thing came to my mind. They say the only thing certain in life is death and taxes. Well, in the world of radio, there was one other certainty you could count on. Sergeant Friday and his partner would always solve the crime and catch the crook. You just heard the episode The Big Lover from Dragnet. The episode was first heard on the evening of Thursday, March 29th, 1951 on NBC and starred Jack Webb as Sergeant Friday and Ben Alexander is Sergeant Frank Smith, Fry's partner. Every episode of Dragnet on both the radio and television series featured real-life case files from the Los Angeles Police Department. Everything was real, from the weather conditions of the day to the number of footsteps it would take to get from one end of the hallway to the other. Well, my time with you is almost done. If you'd like to send me requests or feedback, please email me at opr@telus.net. Or write to me at Old Parlor Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. Tune in again next week for another trip down memory lane. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week. ¶¶